Welcome to the OrthoClips podcast series, where we're going to discuss the latest hot topics and high-impact papers in orthopedic surgery. I'm your host, Saqib Rahman. Let's get this episode started. All right, welcome back to the OrthoClips podcast series. And today I am with Dr. Courtney Quinn. She's an orthopedic sports medicine surgeon at Inova Hospital System in Fairfax, Virginia. Dr. Quinn is also a team physician for the Washington Spirit, Loudoun United. She's a consultant for DC United and team physician for George Mason University Club Sports. And Courtney and I go back a little bit to our time back in Philadelphia, Temple University. So thanks for coming on the podcast.
Of course. Thank you so much. It's great to be here and I appreciate you having me.
Yeah. Well, we're going to be talking about lateral ankle instability. Who actually needs surgery? And I know this is an interest of yours as, you know, a sports medicine surgeon, but someone who has subspecialty training in foot and ankle as well. Hopefully this is going to be a great one for our listeners. So, you know, the first thing I wanted to ask is if you can tell us what got you interested in the topic. If there's a story about a patient that really stuck with you or made you realize how challenging this can be, or whatever the reasons may be, what got you interested in this?
Yeah, so I think my interest really began in my foot and ankle fellowship. So I spent a few months out in Vail at the Stedman Clinic with Dr. Tom Clanton and Tommy Haight-Manick, who are just absolutely phenomenal mentors. And like very often, I think all of us can attest, when you have a great mentor who really spends time with you and shows you how interesting and fun a certain pathology can be, it really kind of sticks with you. So Dr. Clanton particularly, he's been studying this in depth for many years. He's done a lot of really, really good anatomic and biomechanical research primarily on lateral ankle instability. And just honestly spending time with him in the anatomy lab, like him kind of doing dissections and showing me the way that he approaches these problems and how he thinks about it, was really impactful. And then it being out in Colorado, those two surgeons are there, they get a lot of this pathology to come in. It's also in Colorado, a lot of people are hiking and rolling their ankles a lot. So I saw high volume of it while I was there just in the clinic, and then of course operative volume. So I got to really appreciate a lot of the nuances for surgical techniques and kind of tips and tricks, which I just found really, really interesting. And then it kind of segued into kind of serendipitously in my practice now. I take care of, as you said, a lot of soccer athletes. And soccer is probably one of the most high-risk sports for foot and ankle injuries in general, but particularly ankle instability, you know, right up there with probably basketball and volleyball. So it just so happened that the practice that I have, I see a lot of it. And so now in my own, when I treat these athletes, and some of them aren't just, you know, this happens to athletes and the, you know, recreational, you know, weekend warrior as well. And I treat a lot of it. It's been a pathology, not only that I really enjoyed, you know, kind of the surgical side of things, but really the post-operative and even patients who don't need surgery. I mean, what I like about this is that oftentimes we can really make them much better pretty quickly with either appropriate rehab, or if they do the go surgical route, you know, after usually a couple months, like 3-4 months, they're kind of back to doing what they like to do and they feel a big difference, which, you know, I think a lot of us go into surgery because we like that relatively quick satisfaction that we can change someone's life in the course of a couple months. So it's been really kind of a long-winded kind of evolution for me. I also just myself, you know, had a lot of, you know, not to be cliche about it, but I personally kind of had many ankle sprains and have very loose ankles myself. So I feel like I can kind of relate to the patients in that in that realm. But, you know, always trying to improve and work on my own techniques too. But that's really where it began, I think, mostly in fellowship.
So one question I had was, when a patient comes into your clinic saying, you know, their ankle keeps giving way and, you know, they have pain and they think it keeps giving way, or you elicit that from their history, you know, how do you think about whether it's like mechanical, like true mechanical instability or more functional instability or something else entirely? I guess I'm just trying to define the problem as you see it.
Yeah, no, it's a good question because someone just coming in with kind of a chief complaint of like my ankle rolls or instability could mean a whole slew of things. They're just for just as a kind of to go on the terminology you used and give a little background, so more of the mechanical instability is really patients who have structural issues with the structural integrity of the lateral ankles. Like they have sprained or torn, partially torn the lateral ankle ligament complex before, either once or many times, and there's just a deficiency of the tissue there that's not providing the appropriate check reins needed to keep the joint stable, and therefore if they kind of hit an incline wrong or something like that, that the ankle can kind of give out on them. And then there's more of the functional instability, which people talk about as a not that there's anything structurally wrong necessarily with the ligaments, but there's could be a variety of other things, a deconditioned kind of neuromuscular element of it where they just don't have maybe a appropriate peroneal strength or they have an imbalance somewhere. There's been a lot of research recently on more of like, is it the whole kinetic chain, or is there more gluteal strength that needs to be worked on to give patients a certain degree of stability that's not necessarily, again, related to the ligaments. And so so that's something we have to tease out as clinicians in the office. I get a really thorough, try to get as thorough a history of what actually happens when this, what position does the ankle go in when it happens, in what circumstances does this happen? So is it happening only when you're playing sports or only when you're doing something like quote unquote high risk, or is it happening just when you're walking down the street and you happen to hit a rock wrong or something like that, and get a really good sense of like how severe the problem is for them and in what circumstances. Is it when they're distracted by something where they're not really firing the dynamic stabilizers of the ankle appropriately, et cetera. And so for me, it's really the getting the history, in the physical exam. So determining between mechanical and functional instability is really the physical exam, and then some advanced imaging if needed. With functional instability, really their physical exam should be pretty normal from the sense of us from your stability exam. So your anterior drawer or your Taylor tilt or some variations of those. There's a lot of different kind of sub variations of those exams. Those are the two main ones I use for lateral ankle instability. If they are relatively normal and equivalent to the other side, so everything in the foot and ankle, as with pretty much any joint, I always evaluate the contralateral side for a comparison. And if they're pretty much equivalent both sides, but they have this complaints of continuing to roll, and X-rays are normal, et cetera, then I usually that to me is kind of functional instability until proven otherwise. We definitely some physical therapy would be the probably definitive treatment for them. If they have, if a patient comes in with me with a history of numerous sprains, they feel like their ankle is loose, it's now causing a lot of pain because they're having potentially some of these downstream effects of instability like peroneal pathology or cartilage injuries of the talus, early arthritis, all that kind of stuff can happen if it kind of sits for a bit. Then I'll be more quick to get advanced imaging to kind of confirm what we think is going on with the ligaments. But mostly, honestly, when I get advanced imaging, I'm kind of looking for concomitant pathology because I know for the most part, if someone has a physical exam that's consistent with an unstable ankle and their history is like that, I know what the MRI is going to kind of look like. I'm not too surprised when that comes back. It's more for me, I'm like, I want to make sure that there's no, what else is going on? If this is going to go into something surgical eventually, what do I need to address any of those other concomitant things? The kind of, some of the patients that are difficult to deal with are the ligamentously lax patients who will have like normal imaging but a loose ankle. I'm going to put them more in the kind of the functional category too, because they really just need a lot of the working on their dynamic stabilizers to keep them functional and stable. So yeah, that's the kind of big difference, I think, is if the physical exam and the imaging both need to kind of confirm that there's a structural problem for them to be more of the kind of mechanical instability as opposed to functional.
Okay, really helpful. And moving on to management. So you've kind of tried to make that assessment. When do you decide that non-operative management has truly failed? I'm thinking about bracing or the duration of rehab or the type of rehab, like what kind of questions are you asking or making sure that they've actually had done? And how do what considerations may be different between like an athlete and a non-athlete when you're thinking about, that non-operative management and whether or not you need to move to the next phase?
Yeah, sure. Physical therapy is absolutely like mandatory for everybody, you know, whether that's this is mechanical or functional of any kind. I think everyone should have at least 3 months of what I'll call high quality physical therapy where they're working on. And I'll always, when they come back, if the patient's been to PT, I'll ask them kind of what they're doing. And I'm looking for that they're working on balance, proprioception, a lot of Bosu ball work, eversion strength, a lot of band work, but also making sure that they've been addressing more, like I said, the proximal kinetic chain. So they're doing like single leg squats, they're able to do clamshells, these sorts of things to kind of work on their abductors as well, as that's been kind of shown to also play a role with this. And not just, you know, sometimes they're just you ask the question and what they're doing in PT, and they're like, "Oh, I just do a bunch of toe yoga, moving marbles back and forth." I'm like, "Well, that's not going to necessarily be super helpful for you for this problem." So absolutely, at least 3 months, I think, for everybody, because even if you have mechanical instability, which is, you know, both of these are incredibly common, the majority of patients are not going to need surgery, and so you really, you know, everyone needs to do that, and most people can recover and really regain a lot of stability in general to the ankle with therapy. Bracing is a huge part of the practice of my practice. I think with my athletes, I after even an initial ankle sprain, or if they're a recurrent ankle sprainer, you know, I have them pretty much brace or tape, although a brace is preferred. Tape tends to kind of stretch out by about 15 minutes, and really has proven to be, after like about 15 minutes, and sometimes probably earlier, not really that effective. That's a struggle for me because soccer players hate to have a brace on. They really like to prefer to tape their ankles, so it's a little bit of a battle on that end. But a brace while you play sports. So I tell patients, like, wear it whenever you're doing anything high risk. If you're going for a hike, if you're playing a cutting sport, if you're just going out for a jog or in your daily everyday life, or you're going to the gym, you don't need to necessarily need to wear the brace. But you know, wear it during those times, because of course we're trying to balance wearing it when it's high risk without them becoming too dependent on it. It's not something that's meant to be worn every day. And my athletes, you know, I always try that. So PT and those bracing, just to kind of summarize, is important for everybody. One of the things about bracing, I'll ask patients, sometimes I'll have patients go through all this, they do their PT, and then they're wearing the brace, and they'll say that they're even rolling their, like, they'll be playing volleyball and rolling their ankle even when they're wearing the brace, which I'm going to assume that the brace is fitted correctly and it's on correctly. That to me is like kind of a, okay, maybe not operative management's not working for this patient. If they're really still able to invert enough that they're or have their ankle so unstable that even a brace isn't helping them, that would be a kind of sign that conservative treatment's probably not going to work for this patient. In my athletes, you know, I do have a little bit of a lower threshold to intervene. Certainly if it's impacting their play, and if it's impacting their ability to perform at the level they really want to be at. So, you know, if it's a high school athlete who has collegiate aspirations and they've had a couple bad ankle sprains, and then we have a little bit of an off season coming up, I think, you know, I talk with them about the pros and cons, and I say, hey, maybe we kind of aim for this off season to do surgery early on so you can recover and head into recruiting season, you know, without much of an impact on you. And so that's why maybe with athletes, I'm a little bit quicker to pull the trigger. I think it is important to note that, like, it is very rare that I ever like operate on someone first time. Even in my professional athletes, when they have this happened recently, one of my athletes had, grade 3 tears of ATFL and CFL, and initial sprain, and you know, we with appropriate rehab, appropriate, you know, immobilization at first, rehab has made really a full recovery. So that's, you know, I think that's something that different sports surgeons have a little bit of a different threshold on, about the what do you do with the very elite athlete initial grade 3 ankle sprain. But I think it's been consistent. You know, I think our my experience has certainly been that the vast majority of people can avoid surgery. I think that's all I wanted to kind of say on that part of it. So yeah, I mean, if they fail, you know, 3 months of PT and the bracing, I'd say then we usually have a surgical discussion.
Okay. So when you do decide to have a patient indicated for surgery, how do you decide on various techniques like, a Bostrom or, a variety of that, or augmented repairs or internal bracing, without getting into, I guess, too much technical detail necessarily? And, are there any specific patient factors that push you to decide for one technique versus another?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different techniques out there for the actual Bostrom type procedure, or like the advancement of lateral ligament complex and the extensor retinaculum, which I won't get into, but I think this is something that was taught to me as a resident by you and other wonderful surgeons about when there's multiple ways to do things that that usually means that there's no one right way. And so I definitely take that into thought, because there's when I think about how I approach these problems, I do pretty much a standard Bostrom procedure on the majority of patients. I think it's a good point you bringing up the whether there's utility for an augmented repair or not, because that's a huge topic right now. Interestingly enough, I do think this is the concept of internal bracing and augmenting is very industry driven, because the studies really have not shown that it makes any difference. It might be superior in patients that have a subtle kind of varus hind foot, and so you're kind of compensating for a little bit of that mechanic, that kind of structural mechanical predisposition for lateral ankle instability with that in that population. But if we're talking about just patients with a regular kind of neutral hind foot, neutral foot alignment, augmentation has really not shown, even in some biomechanical studies, to really add a whole lot of value. It doesn't seem to really improve return to play, risk of recurrence, et cetera. So you take that with a grain of salt. I think that being said, I do use it oftentimes in my athletes, mostly because I do like to do an accelerated rehab program with them. And if there's a chance, if we feel a little bit more comfortable that I can get them back faster because there's a little bit of extra support in there, even if it's just theoretical, I think there's not a whole lot of downsides. And we can talk about kind of pitfalls for using internal brace, et cetera, if you'd like. But if you're doing it correctly and you're isometric with it, it's not going to add too much of a issue for, in your repair, not many risks in doing it, if you will. And so I will use it in my athletes for that regard. But honestly, for the average everyday patient, I do a straightforward Bostrom. The other patient population is, and I'm seeing this kind of, I feel like I've seen it a lot recently in my practice, for that really ligamentously lax patient, or for someone who's been just dealing with chronic ankle instability for many years, and you get an MRI and they have like this very like kind of patulous capsular tissue on the lateral ankle, and there's just no, the it's very thin. You don't even see like a remnant of anything that's at all good quality. Then what I'll do is actually a primary reconstruction. And so those are the two patients I do them in. Primary and like patients with very high Batten scores, or patients who have on MRI have had like the tissue just looks really poor quality. Then I'll do a primary lateral ankle ligament reconstruction with an allograft. A little bit more of an invasive technique, but I rehab them the same, and they do really well too. So those are the only kind of differences in how I usually deviate from my normal.
Okay. Well, before we wrap up, and this has been great so far, I guess the last thing I wanted to ask you about was just maybe not technical, pitfalls per se with certain procedures that you mentioned, but just what would you say are some of the biggest pitfalls in management of lateral ankle instability in general, from the office to surgery to post-op? Any pearls kind of takeaway that you want to impart on our listeners?
Yeah, I think from the initial visit, I think if I can talk a little bit about just kind of the way I approach patients in terms of when a patient comes in your office for the initial ankle sprain, I give a lot of them the same spiel, if you will. I tell them that they're going to do PT, and we talk about what type of immobilization they might need for a brief period. I usually do either 2 weeks in a boot if they're pretty swollen and walking with quite a limp, or just an ankle brace for a couple of weeks, and then the brace to be used only during sports. And I tell them it's going to take, anywhere between 6 to, like on average, about 6 to 8 weeks for the average ankle sprain to improve. Some are only 2 weeks, some take a couple months. So that's an average number. But I usually say at that point, your ankle really shouldn't hurt you or really be continuing to roll on you. If you've done at least, 2 months of PT and it's still either painful or it's rolling on you, that's what I tell them to come back. I think the pain element is interesting because it's like if they're not, it's always been a little bit perplexing for me sometimes because they could have pain for a variety of reasons. Obviously, they have pain initially, but if they have pain later on, then it usually makes me think, that there's something else going on. Maybe they have a cartilage defect that happened at time zero that we didn't pick up on because the X-rays are normal, or a peroneal tendon pathology, or but then there's a subset of patients that just have pain for not, otherwise their imaging is pretty normal, but that's not typical for, usually these patients just have this complaint of instability and not necessarily like pain on a daily basis. So I would say just like for the practitioner is kind of like thinking about their patients too. It's if the if they continue to have pain, I usually pull a trigger on getting an MRI to just see what else is going on, so that we're not missing something that's maybe a little bit more consequential, if you will. And then those are just the kind of for the patients in the office. I think another kind of thing to take away, I guess, from when I'm managing and managing particularly the functional instability is that sometimes patients have they might have pain from something else that's causing them to like catch and feel unstable because of pain. So the instability and the pain kind of work both ways and they can kind of play off of each other. So I do think like listening more to the pain complaint and seeing where the pain's coming from. Is it coming from more proximal? Is it truly in the ankle? And is it something painful in the ankle that's causing them to kind of their ankle to kind of give out? The same way that happens in the knee. If a knee is painful, oftentimes people complain of instability because their quad kind of shuts down really quickly. It's very similar to that concept. So I think the ankle responds like that too. And then for just kind of my post-op surgical patients, I think I always counsel them that it's likely after the surgery that we're actually going to make, the goal of the surgery is to make the ankle a little bit tighter. We're going to make it tighter. They're actually not going to probably fully resume or get back their complete range of motion that they had before, especially in inversion, eversion. And most patients are really happy with that, but it's important to have that conversation beforehand because, you obviously just want to inform the patient of what to expect. Most patients who have had hypermobility in their ankle for a long time are like more than happy to take that over what they've been dealing with. But I do think that that can be a common like a post-operative, complicate. I don't know if you want to call it complication, but just kind of a consequence that is important to have the conversation beforehand.
Okay. Well, I think that's a lot of information. And I think we spoke, I think, a lot about indications and what to look for with a patient who presents with this. It's such a common injury. And I think ultimately, who needs surgery is a good question. I mean, because we all see these and sometimes it's not clear, but I think you helped to clear a lot of that stuff up. So I appreciate that.
Of course. Thank you.
Well, I mean, just to wrap things up, I've been talking with Dr. Courtney Quinn about lateral ankle instability, who actually needs surgery. And it was a great discussion, Dr. Quinn. I really appreciate you coming on the podcast and taking your time to talk about this. And appreciate it.
It was great speaking with you. Thank you.
All right. Great talking to you.